Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're looking at a topic that, on the surface, feels like it should be pretty straightforward.
Right.
But the more I looked into the research you sent over, the more I realized it's a complete constitutional minefield. We're talking about the police, the badge, and who actually owns the words that come out of, say, a police organization's mouth.
It is a fascinating tangle, isn't it?
Right.
It's right at that messy intersection of employment law, the First Amendment, and, you know, the very unique power dynamics of law enforcement.
Right. And to kick things off, I want to start with the assumption that I think 99% of people would have. I mean, I certainly did before reading this.
Okay.
If you just stopped someone on the street and asked, can the NYPD control what a police organization says? They'd say, of course.
And why do you think that feels so obvious to people?
Well, because they're cops. You know, it's a paramilitary organization. They have uniforms, ranks, a chain of command. You don't get to just mouth off to the general. If the NYPD employs you, then surely they own your professional speech.
That is the intuitive answer.
Yeah.
It feels completely logical because we see the uniform and we think, you know, total submission to authority. But here's the reality check. That assumption is constitutionally wrong.
Wrong. Even with that whole paramilitary structure.
Even with the structure.
Yeah.
What we're diving into today isn't really a debate about whether police speech is, you know, polite or constructive. This is a structural boundary problem.
A boundary problem.
Yeah. The core thesis in the legal analysis we're looking at is this. The NYPD may manage its workforce, but it may not manage the truth.
Manage the workforce, not the truth. Okay, that sounds great on a bumper sticker, but how does that actually play out? Because if I'm the police commissioner and I've got a union blasting my policies in the press, my first thought is I have to shut this down to keep order.
And that impulse, that need to shut it down for order, is exactly where the government gets into trouble. And to understand why, we have to talk about the two hats doctrine.
Two hats. I'm picturing the commissioner literally swapping hats at his desk.
Metaphorically, that's exactly what's happening. The Supreme Court has recognized that the government plays two very distinct roles. Hat number one is the employer.
Okay, the boss, the one signing the checks.
Right. And when the government wears that employer hat, its main goal is efficiency. It needs the trains to run on time, the fires put out, investigations closed.
Makes sense.
So in this role, the government actually has significant power to restrict speech. They can say, you can't spend your whole shift debating politics, or you can't be rude to citizens.
Of course. You can't be standing on your desk screaming about tax policy when you're supposed to be taking a 911 call. That's just being a bad employee.
Exactly. But then there's hat number two, the sovereign.
Okay.
This is the state as the regulator of the public square, the entity making laws for everybody. And when the government wears this hat, it is strictly bound by the First Amendment. It can't censor speech just because it doesn't like the viewpoint.
Okay, but here's where it gets fuzzy for me. When a police officer speaks, aren't they always an employee? I mean, when does that sovereign hat ever come into play for them?
That is the million-dollar question. And the trap that agencies fall into is trying to use the employer hat to crush speech that really belongs in the public square. They try to argue that because you work for the state owns your voice 24/7.
And this isn't just about police, is it? I was thinking about this while reading. The same logic has to apply to basically anyone on the public payroll.
Absolutely. This is the exact same legal firewall that protects a public school teacher when she criticizes the curriculum at a school board meeting or a doctor at a public hospital warning about unsafe conditions.
Wow.
If the employer hat was the only one that existed, the government could effectively silence every teacher, every firefighter, every single civil servant in the country.
That really puts the stakes in perspective. So how do the courts figure out which hat is in play? I know you sent over some case names, but what's the logic?
Well, it comes down to a balancing test. The courts have to weigh the government's interest in, you know, a smooth running workplace against the employee's right to speak as a citizen on matters of public concern.
Public concern feels like a pretty fuzzy term. What actually counts?
It's broader than you might think. Generally, it's anything that impacts the community. So corruption, safety issues, budget mismanagement. If you're just griping that your lunch break is too short, that's probably a private grievance.
But if you're saying the lunch break policy is causing fatigue, that endangers the public.
Now you're moving into the territory of public concern.
Okay, but then we hit this big roadblock I've heard about called Garcetti. It seems like bosses love to throw that case around as the ultimate shut up button.
It is often weaponized that way, yes.
Yeah.
Garcetti basically established what's called the job duty rule. The Supreme Court said that if you make a statement pursuant to your official duties, so the specific task you are paid to do, then the First Amendment offers you no protection.
So if I'm a detective and I write an official police report that says, I think this suspect is innocent and my boss hates it.
You can be disciplined for that. That report is a work product. The government has, in effect, bought that speech. They can edit it, reject it, and yeah, punish you if it doesn't meet their standards.
That seems fair, actually. If I pay a copywriter for a burger ad and they write an ad for tacos, I shouldn't have to use it.
Precisely. But here is where the abuse comes in. Police departments love to claim that everything a cop says is pursuant to official duties.
The old, you're a cop 24 hours a day, so everything you say is work product line.
Right. They try to argue that because you learned about, say, corruption at work, then speaking about it is part of your job duty.
Mm.
But the courts have pushed back hard on that. They've been very clear. Work-related does not equal unprotected.
This sounds like a perfect transition to the Matthews case, which I found fascinating. It plays out like a movie. This isn't just abstract legal theory. This was a real guy putting his entire career on the line.
It really is a dramatic story. This is Matthews v. City of New York. Officer Matthews was working in the Bronx, and he noticed something really disturbing. His precinct had an illegal quota system for arrests and stop and frisks.
Which, just to be clear for everyone, is not legal. You can't just tell officers, go find 10 crimes today.
Correct. It leads to unconstitutional stops, harassment, all just to hit a number. So Matthews saw the damage this was doing. He reported it up the chain. Nothing happened. So then he took a huge risk. He spoke about it more broadly.
And the empire struck back.
Hard. He faced retaliation. And when he sued, the city of New York made this very bold argument. They said, look, Matthews is a cop. His job is to enforce the law. When he talks about arrest policies, he's just doing his job. Therefore, under Garcetti, we can punish him.
They tried to use that job duty trap. They were trying to say that complaining about illegal quotas was part of his official duties.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the court just slammed the door on that argument.
Yeah.
They ruled that, no, Matthews was not hired to set policy. He wasn't hired to critique management. When he spoke out, he wasn't acting as an employee. He was acting as a citizen on a matter of massive public concern.
So the ruling was that even though the topic was policing, he was still protected by the First Amendment.
Yes. The court basically recognized that if you silence the people who are actually doing the job, the public stays in the dark forever. Who else is going to know about secret quotas?
Like what?
Only the cops. If they can't speak, the corruption gets hidden.
Okay, so Matthews won. That's great. But let's be realistic. He had to go through years of litigation. He had to be willing to become a pariah. Most people, they just want to pay their mortgage. They're not going to risk their career like that.
You are 100% right. Individual protection is the constitutional floor, but it's a very shaky floor to stand on by yourself.
So is there a safer way to speak up?
That is where we pivot to the collective voice. And this is the real technical heart of our deep dive today. The idea of corporate separateness.
This part threw me a little at first. It sounds more like corporate law than civil rights law. Why does it even matter if the speech comes from a corporation?
Well, think of it this way. The NYPD employs Officer Smith. Officer Smith is a person subject to the chain of command. But Officer Smith is also a member of, say, the Patrolman's Benevolent Association, the PBA, or a fraternal order.
Right.
Those organizations are distinct legal persons.
Like how a company is considered a person in the eyes of the law.
Exactly like that. They have their own bylaws, their own bank accounts, their own elected leaders. And crucially, the NYPD does not employ the corporation.
Hold on, let me try an analogy. I work for a big tech company. I also own shares in that company. If I go to a shareholder meeting and say, the CEO is running this place into the ground, I might get fired as an employee.
You might.
But the company can't tell the shareholders as a group that they're not allowed to speak.
That is a brilliant analogy. The NYPD has an employment relationship with the officer, but it has no employment relationship with the Fraternal Order of Police. It cannot assign official duties to the Emerald Society. You can't order a corporation to walk a beat.
So because the department can't assign official duties to the organization, the whole Garcetti rule, it just can't apply.
Yeah, bingo. The trapdoor is sealed shut. So if the NYPD tries to silence the organization, they are no longer an employer disciplining a worker. They are the state, the sovereign, trying to silence a private speaker.
That's just straight up unconstitutional.
It is classic viewpoint discrimination. The courts have been very, very clear on this. The corporate form acts as a shield. It separates the speaker from the employer.
Okay, so if the law is this clear, if that wall between the department and the union is that high, Why does it still feel like departments control the narrative? We don't see these organizations going rogue every day.
No, you don't. And that's because something else is happening. This is where we get into the dark arts of bureaucracy. The source material calls it discipline framing.
That sounds ominous. Break that down for me.
Okay, so imagine you're a police chief. You know you can't just fire the union president for criticizing your budget. You'd lose that lawsuit in a heartbeat. So you don't punish the speech. You find something else.
Like what?
Let's say Officer Jones, who's very active in the union, gives a quote to the press about expired safety gear. 2 days later, he gets a disciplinary write-up, not for the quote, but because his shoes weren't shined to regulation standards, or he was 3 minutes late to roll call last week.
It's the Al Capone strategy. Can't get him for murder, so you get him for tax evasion. Can't get him for speech, so you get him for scuffed shoes.
Exactly. They reframe the discipline as a totally neutral behavioral issue. We're not silencing him. We're just maintaining professional standards.
And that must be incredibly hard to fight in court because, I mean, technically his shoes were dirty.
It's incredibly difficult. And what it creates is what lawyers call a chilling effect. You don't even have to fire the guy. You just have to harass him enough, deny his transfer request, change his shift, launch some petty investigation. And everyone else watches and thinks, you know what? I am just going to keep my mouth shut.
It weaponizes fear.
It absolutely does. It's retaliation by proxy. They attack the individual members to silence the organization as a whole.
But is that legal? I mean, if they can prove the shoes were dirty, can they get away with it?
It all comes down to motive. There's a Supreme Court case, Heffernan, that's critical here. It established that if the government's motive is to suppress protected speech, the action is illegal, even if they find a technical excuse.
Motive matters. But proving someone's motive, that sounds really hard and really expensive.
It is. And that's why this managed dissent is so common. Agencies are banking on the fact that fighting this kind of claim takes years and a lot of money. So the friendly organizations, the ones that praise the chief, they get a seat at the table. The critical ones get discipline framed into silence.
But I have to play devil's advocate for a second. This is the police we're talking about. They have guns. They have immense power. If you have a police force where the rank and file are constantly at war with leadership in the press, doesn't that become dangerous? Don't we need that chain of command?
That's a completely fair pushback. And I want to be very clear. The law doesn't create anarchy. The NYPD absolutely has lawful regulatory power.
Okay, so where is that line? What can they actually ban?
A few things. First, on-duty conduct. If you are on the clock, you follow orders. You can't stop in the middle of an operation, talk to a reporter. Second, official duty speech, those reports we talked about. And third, they can enforce what are called neutral time, place, and manner rules.
Give me a real-world example of a neutral rule.
The uniform is a perfect one. The department can have a rule that says no one is allowed to wear the NYPD uniform at a political rally. That's neutral. It applies to everyone. Doesn't matter if you're rallying for a Republican, a Democrat, or the union itself.
Okay, that seems reasonable. You don't want the authority of the state co-opted for a political campaign.
Right. But here's the key distinction. They can regulate the workplace, and they can regulate the uniform, but they cannot regulate the narrative.
So, if the union president puts on a suit and tie, stands on the steps of City Hall on his day off, and says, the commissioner's policies are failing, the department can't touch him.
Constitutionally, no, they cannot. Because at that moment, he is a private citizen representing an independent corporation, speaking on a matter of public concern. The employer hat is off. The sovereign hat is on.
This brings me to a thought about incentives. If the law is actually this protective, why does this confusion persist? Why do so many people, cops included, assume they're gagged?
Just think about the incentives for the city. If you're a city attorney or a police commissioner, do you really want more transparency?
Probably not. Transparency means lawsuits. It means bad headlines.
Exactly. Controlling the narrative prevents accountability. If you can convince your workforce that they have no right to speak, you prevent the discovery of corruption. You stop the lawsuit before it even starts.
No.
Silence is the ultimate risk management strategy.
So it's a bluff, a systemic institutional bluff.
It is. And remember what we said at the beginning. This isn't just about police. If this legal wall crumbles, if we accept that government employment means total silence, then we lose the ability to hear from the people who know how our society actually runs.
The teachers who know the schools are failing, the engineers who know the bridge is unsafe.
The social workers who know the foster system is broken. These are the insiders. They have the knowledge. If the government can use that employer hat to gag all of them, the sovereign becomes completely unaccountable.
That's a terrifying thought. It turns public service into a black box.
Which is why the courts, when these cases actually get to them, usually side with the speaker. But it requires the speaker to have the courage, and frankly the money, to fight back.
So let's wrap this up. We've gone through the two hats, the Matthews floor, the corporate shield, and this really sneaky tactic of discipline framing. If there is one core idea you want the listener to take away from this whole deep dive, what is it?
It goes right back to that thesis we started with. Authority ends where accountability begins. The government has a right to an efficient workplace. It does not have the right to a comfortable silence.
Not the right to a comfortable silence. I like that.
We often talk about transparency as if it's this gift the government just gives us. But real transparency usually comes from friction. It comes from somebody on the inside saying, hey, wait a minute, this isn't right. Protecting that friction isn't just a labor issue, it's a democracy issue.
And it seems like the people with the most knowledge are often the ones who are most vulnerable.
Exactly. They're the ones who know where the lights need to be turned on.
Well, this has definitely changed how I'll look at the news next time I see a police union statement. It's not just noise, it's a stress test of the First Amendment. Thank you so much for walking us through this.
My pleasure. It was great.
And thank you to everyone listening. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.